Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. As always, it is Carl. It is Friday, and I hope you had a good week. Now, having a good week is often dependent on where you work. And if you had a good time or not, a lot of times it's about the culture. And I'm excited to have with us today Nancy Lyons from Clockwork. How's it going, Nancy?
It's going good, Carl. How are you?
It's going good. You know, you asked me that question earlier. I don't like to think about it. But I think it's going pretty good. Now, you're an alumni of 200 camps, and we have had you keynote multiple summits. So thank you for all that. Thank you for being such a strong supporter.
Of course.
Now, Clockwork gets recognized all the time for being an amazing place to work. I mean, I don't want to put a number on it, but I think maybe, 16 times, right, that you've won the Best Workplace Awards. Yeah. Is culture something that you plan, that you put a strategy against? Or what's the secret to creating such a great place?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's not something that we talk much about, or we certainly haven't historically talked much about in business school, about how to create healthy cultures. But I think it is something that's really deliberate. And I think it is, not only is it something you put a strategy against, but I think it is a bit of a business strategy, because where there are healthy people, there is, there are healthy deliverables, there are healthy client relationships. So I think that, you know, really thinking about the kind of culture you want to create is as important as thinking about the product you want to deliver.
And that makes perfect sense. Happy people are going to want to extend that out, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how we are as social creatures, as primates. Like we want to be a part of the group. And when you're in that great space and you feel like you're being taken care of, it's just easy to relax, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, in addition to that, you're proud of what you've become a part of, because culture isn't about, you know, sort of the trickle down of leadership thinking. Culture is owned by everyone, and culture evolves because of everyone's participation and belief in the value of it. And so culture isn't just about how I think and what I mandate. It's how everybody comes to work every day and participates in the daily operation and the daily delivery of the work. So I think that makes you feel good about where you are. It makes you feel valued. It makes you feel a part of something bigger than yourself. And you take that out into the world and you represent not just the work that you do, but the people you do it with in, I think, ways that are appealing to potential clients. So for us, it's part of our sales strategy. It's part of our brand. It's part of the brand promise and the promise we make to our clients. So it's not just you're going to get great work. We're going to give you solutions that solve your problems. It's also, you're going to enjoy working with us, which I think when technology is part of the equation is a big question mark in most clients' minds. I think they're terrified of the big spend. I think they're concerned about what they don't understand. I think they're worried about, you know, vendors with attitude. And I think the fact that we have, you know, one of our core values is we're nice. And niceness is baked into our culture, and it's not fake nice, it's real nice. And I think knowing that you're going to work with people that you actually enjoy, both internally and in our client relationships, makes for great business relationships. And that is a sales strategy.
Yeah, without a doubt. And a prospect coming into Clockwork is going to feel that culture.
Yeah, I mean, we hear that often. When we're pitching work, we often invite prospects here at some point in the process, whether they're in town or not, because people say that when they walk through our doors, the energy is palpable. And we have clients all over the country. And when they come here, they really enjoy it. We have clients here in town. There's a lot of Fortune 500s, a lot of Fortune 100s here in Minneapolis. And oftentimes they'll park here, you know, our clients will park here for a period of time because they like the energy. They like the camaraderie. They like being a part of, you know, their team. And we want that.
Now, I used to work at a full service agency, and the woman that ran it, Melanie, was brilliant. And she was brilliant in a lot of different ways. But one thing she did that I always appreciated was when we would have a prospect come through the office, and we wouldn't know, it wouldn't be like prompted, we wouldn't be told, but there would always be, we had empty offices, we had a really big space, and she would tell the prospect, and that's where you can work from if you need to escape from your day to day. And it was so strong. And we would find that those prospects would come back, they would become clients, and they would become lifelong clients, even when they went somewhere else.
Yeah, we see the same thing. I mean, our space is a reflection of us. And, you know, the collaborative spaces are where you see the most people. And, you know, interestingly, where a lot of people hang out, we have two buildings, and in both buildings, we have a pretty big kitchen. And it's just like your house. Like when you have a party at your house, where do you find people? Inevitably, they're gathering in the kitchen because that's the meeting place. That's the place where you feel familiar. And at home, here, it's the same thing. We have these two big kitchens with these two big tables that people gather around. And inevitably, you see people near or in the kitchen. We also have these, what we call quads. They're small-ish conference rooms that are situated around those kitchens. So when people break out to collaborate, you find them there. And that's oftentimes where we find clients. So they'll hang out in the kitchen with everybody else. When they need some private time, they hide in a quad. And they're, you know, we have windows that help us to see into those quads. And we can see them in there working and talking and making themselves at home. And that's really what we want. We want them to make themselves at home.
Now you're saying you're in two buildings. How many people are working at Clockwork?
There's 71.
71. Mm-hmm. And how fast have you been growing? Like how many people were you 2 years ago?
2 years ago, we were probably 60 something. But in the last few years, we've been very deliberate in our growth.
Good. Sorry.
And no, it is. It is good. And I would say that, you know, we were, we've been just slow and steady. And in the last couple of years, we've really been trying to determine if everybody here is absolutely the right fit. I wouldn't say that we don't have a lot of, like, we don't have a ton of turnover, but the turnover that we do have is very intentional. Because the people that are here are part of, we have these four multidiscipline client facing teams, and they act as four small businesses, and they have to be able to operate in that context. And every single person at the table has to bring some amount of leadership to their role. So, you know, it's not just a dev in a corner, in a cubicle or whatever. They bring some amount of leadership thinking to the work that they do. That's really important to us. So our growth is a reflection of the way we've sort of deliberately tried to flesh out those teams. Because they are the whole relationship with our clients. And any one of them, you know, can find themselves in a client meeting, you know, taking a client call on site with the client, doing strategy work with the client. So they all are pretty multidisciplined and very well versed in business. And so our growth has not been, oh, hire seven devs or, you know, hire a bunch of designers. It's been very much about we need this position filled on this team doing this kind of work. So yeah, I mean, we're larger than the average. But when you think about it in the context of those teams, it's really several small businesses and they don't act independently, but there's a lot of autonomy on those teams.
Well, and so one of the reasons I accidentally blurted out good was because you think about that size and two different locations, even though it's two different buildings, and culture is so much about energy and so much about knowing who's in the room and understanding them in my experience. So understanding that it's broken into four teams, that's also interesting. So does each team have its own culture?
I think each team has its own unique energy,
okay. But
the culture is shared across the organization. And, you know, we have distributed folks too. So we've got people in, we've got somebody in Austin, we've got somebody in Los Angeles, we've got somebody in Fergus Falls. There you go. Just
well, all right.
Stop on that a minute. The great metropolis of Fergus Falls, we've got somebody in Omaha. You know, some of our team is distributed. The majority of our people are here. And each one of the teams has unique characteristics that I think make them great at the work that they are tasked with. But the culture is the umbrella, is the wrapper that I think unifies all of those teams, you know, under the clockwork value.
I'm curious, with the distributed members of the team that you have, the remote members of the team,
mm-hmm. What
special steps do you take to help them feel part of the culture? Because having run a distributed team a distributed company that was roughly 40 people, you know, satellites form and you get people who start to get in a funk. And so what steps do you take with those people?
Yeah, well, most of our people that are distributed visit us at least once a month. So there is definite office time that's part of the deal. So they can come in and get FaceTime and be part of their team in a physical way. We are constantly exploring ways to communicate. So we make some really thrilling use of Slack, as most organizations are doing these days. In addition to that, I still subscribe to, you know, old school weekly communications via newsletter. So I write a letter to my staff. It used to be weekly. Now it's every other week. And I share that with our COO, Megan. So Megan does a week and then I do a week. And the letter is, you know, here's what's happening. Here's what's in my purview. Here's what's on my mind. Here's what we're looking at. In terms of, you know, new business opportunities. In addition to that, there's, you know, we call out great accomplishments of folks on the staff all over the place. We call out new client opportunities. We call out victories. And so really, I think the most important thing we can do for distributed teams, but also for the teams here, is commit to consistent communication and as much accessibility as we can offer. So every time we have a staff meeting, you know, the cameras are on and those people are in attendance just like everybody else. Every time we have meetings, we try to have them, you know, be FaceTime or Skype or, you know, Google Hangouts. We use a lot of Google Hangouts. We try to eyeball each other as often as possible in a variety of contexts, and we try to keep the communication channels wide open. And I make myself available, and Megan makes herself available, and it works. Now, does it cure everything? No. And do we hear, you know, I think it's next week. So tomorrow I'm going to Denver for a meeting. And next week we have a staff meeting. Some of the staff requested that it be next week because several of them will be visiting. And I'm unable to because I have a conflict. And that makes me feel bad because they want to be in the same room. But now we know. And now we're going to very deliberately try and schedule all of our staff meetings when we know that our distributed staff can be here. So it's just, you know, just a matter of having the right conversations and being open to the feedback.
Well, and I think you're dead on with the consistency and being able to have everybody in the office at least once a month. We used to always talk about people over pixels. And the idea of never having seen someone face-to-face that you're trying to create something great with is just... it's frustrating. So to be able to do that once a month is, I mean, congratulations, because there are a lot of distributed teams that are happy to get together once a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just important to us. And so we make it happen.
You've created this great culture or you've enabled this great culture. I struggle with the ability to create culture. I think you can set it up and nurture it and let it kind of become what it wants to within a certain parameter or certain restraints. I really struggle with this. But I'm curious, what have you struggled with? Like, what have been the challenges where maybe the culture was going somewhere you weren't sure about, or maybe you were just in a bad day? You know, you just couldn't get out of your own funk. How do you deal with those challenges?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I just had a conversation with somebody else who's going to be at Owner Summit in a couple of weeks about transparency. So one of the sessions is going to be about transparency. And we were having this conversation while she prepped for it. And transparency has been the best thing that we've committed to as an organization. And it's been one of those things that has bitten me in the butt on more than one occasion, because what you think you're communicating can be very far away from how it is received. And, you know, one of the things that we have once a year is we have a facilitator come in and conduct a communication workshop to help illustrate. And this is when everybody's in the office and everybody is forced to do it. And I say forced because sometimes people are like, really? But they end up really enjoying it. We take a half a day and we go through this workshop so that we get to see what kind of communicator everybody in the company is. And you break down communication styles by, you know, there are people who are promoters, there are people who are controllers, there are people who are analyzers, and there are people who are supporters. And promoters are like you and me, Carl. We're the people who, and yet you and I have been at events where you've seen the side of me that's not a whole promoter. But promoters are people who can be in a crowd, who can work the crowd, who can meet people, who are constantly moving, lots of energy. They're great at sales, but they may not be super detail oriented.
Yeah.
do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
Very particular, and promoters are usually leaders inside of organizations. They are salespeople. They are driving. They are the driving force. They are the energy. And lots of people don't understand promoters because they seem a little wacky. You know, controllers are the type A folks who like to have the right information and the right process and make the right decision and move in the right direction based on research and, you know, solid thinking and planning. Analyzers are people who hear things and they sort of perseverate. And, you know, they want to get all sorts of information before they make a decision. So they don't necessarily make decisions quickly, but when they do, they're very precise about them. And supporters are people who are relatively passive and support the teams around them, you know, who show up and get a lot of work done, but they do it, you know, in a quieter way. And I think once you know how people communicate, it's eye-opening. But oftentimes when you deliver messages, you have to, you know, you have to consider that there are these different personalities and communication types hearing the messages, and how they receive them may be different than what you intend. And what I've learned over time is that context is of critical importance, because I can say something, and I've certainly done this before, you know, where I've made some sort of declarative statement and people have believed that I have just like laid down the law about something new and walked out, you know, and suddenly they're selling something or doing something or shifting gears because they heard me say, well, from this day forward, we shall always do this, when maybe I was just exploring, or, you know, I was thinking out loud, or I was talking about something, or, you know, talking about a frustration. So I have, you know, created situations where whole teams have made massive, you know, dramatic left turns when all I really wanted them to do was start maybe thinking about something. And so really understanding who you're talking to and how to frame up the message so that they hear it. And, you know, another great example is controllers want to get stuff done. They want to get stuff done. Whereas you and I want to catch up, right? Like we want to talk a little bit before we jump into it. So what I learned about controllers is you don't go to a meeting with a controller without an agenda, and you dive in. You walk in the door and you dive in. If you want to sit around and shoot the shit, you save that for later, because they will feel like you are wasting their time if you don't jump right in with the controller. And Megan, who's our COO and my you know, sort of partner in crime, is an absolute controller.
Right. As is my partner, Greg Hoy.
Yeah, see? So you get it. And once you learn how people communicate, it makes that communication thing a little bit easier if you're willing to be thoughtful about it. So I think where I've really screwed up is just not in being thoughtful enough about who I'm talking to, and just being sort of a classic promoter. And I can't recommend that sort of study enough. I think understanding the different personality types is a brilliant way to get a better handle on your business.
Well, and it's also a great way to to make your life easier.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those types plays a very vital role in the success of a team, right?
Oh, yeah. They're all critical.
So when you're going through the hiring process, do you ever think about the type of communicator you need in a role as well as the skill set?
We do. Yes, absolutely. And interestingly, you know, Owner Camp and the folks in Owner Camp really were very influential as we made our shift to teams. The relationships that I built through, Owner Camp and Owner Summit have been, instrumental in, you know, just creating sounding boards as we made some of these shifts. And interestingly enough, one of the things that we didn't pay a ton of attention to in making the shift was that very thing. So we have one team that is chock full of analyzers and controllers, which is weird, right? Yeah. We've made some shifts since then. But when we got there, you know, and once we fell into a rhythm, realizing that was like, whoa, so now we know better. Now we know how to sort of fill in some of those blanks in the teams. But when we were making when we were deciding on the teams, it was really about skill set and ability. You know, it was really about like what job do we need done here? And now we're layering in sort of the communication thinking, which is interesting.
We're almost out of time, but I was hoping you could answer one more question. I'm curious if a shop were to ask you, like, how do we start? Like, at what point do we just start to fix the culture or make things better? Like, what would you say is a good point to just start?
Now. I think as soon as possible and then always. Because I think when you start looking at most people start examining their culture because something doesn't feel right. Because there's politics or infighting or back channel conversations or something unhealthy is happening, or, you know, partnerships inside of organizations aren't working, or teams aren't functioning well. So usually by the time people say, how do we fix, how do we get a better handle on our culture? It's because they recognize that something isn't working. And I say now, but then don't stop. Like, it doesn't stop. It's an ever evolving, you know, conversation and commitment. And I think, you know, the other thing that people have to sort of let go of, and we're, you know, most of us who own studios or agencies are entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs are brilliant at, you know, being scrappy and not only selling the work, but getting the work done, delivering the work, managing the relationship. But at some point, you have to know when you are not the person who's best suited for the job, whatever the job is, and then learn to let go, empower the people around you and let go. Because most of the reasons why cultures are unhealthy is because somebody in the mix is too controlling. And that's not the controlling personality type. That's different. Controllers are different, but controlling somebody who has just too tight a grip on everybody else trying to do their work or trying to put their spin on, you know, their jobs. So I would say now and always, and let go a little and let your people participate in a meaningful way, and you'll be amazed at what happens.
That's great advice. And thank you so much for giving us your time today, Nancy, and congrats on all the success at Clockwork.
Oh, thanks, Carl. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. And everybody else, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode, and we will talk to you then.